Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and we're here for our second position group review, and that's going to be the safeties today. Joining me for that is Nick Mehta. Nick, how you doing?
Ken, doing great. I actually think this is maybe the most fascinating position group of the Ravens this season, maybe outside of the offensive line.
Yeah, lots of change and incredibly just a light switch turnaround for this team after 10 weeks of hard play, which we'll get through it. But big performance issues, some lack of buy-in, communication breakdowns, out of position play, outbursts from Williams and Jackson over those first 10 weeks that led to benching and cutting, respectively, of those players.
Yeah, I think the difficulties from the veterans was particularly surprising. I think, you know, Jackson certainly on the back end of his career, but had always been reliable in coverage and, you know, came to the Ravens for such a low salary for obvious reasons. He was older. His play had started to slip in recent years, but it was a little surprising to see it crater in such a spectacular fashion. And then when the defense still didn't pick up, you see that the issues were very present with Marcus Williams as well. And so it does make me wonder just a tiny bit if how much of it was Jackson versus Williams versus you just can't have either of them on the field, which is what the Ravens ultimately decided on. But of course, like you said, the turnaround, Ardarius Washington and Kyle Hamilton, such a fantastic closeout to the season.
Yeah, one of the things that you kind of hit on in the cost thing is the cost was cheap, but the opportunity cost of having really four safeties on the roster they couldn't depend on. In different ways. Williams and Jackson, they couldn't depend on to do anything. Neither of them play special teams. Actually, Jackson played some special teams to start the year, but neither of them were big special teams contributors, and Williams didn't play it at all. And neither of them played well on the back end, which we're going to get into in some detail when we talk about them individually. But then Kane and Braid were not solutions for the back end, which is another problem. So those guys were brought in really more as special teams players. And to fill the fact that, say, Marcus Williams doesn't play special teams, you wouldn't expect your starting free safety to do that. But there's big opportunity cost in each of these four players being on your 53-man roster that you don't have guys who can legitimately play the back end.
Yeah, and I think opportunity cost is a good way to describe, especially using, you know, seventh round undrafted free agent, priority signing. Those aren't a ton of resources to spend in the offseason, but then you do have to be willing to kind of part with one if you have to. I'm not sure that Braid or Kane, certainly I don't think both make active rosters on waivers at the beginning of the regular season. I think you could have gotten one of them on the practice squad and then let kind of the natural course of the season dictate, okay, I can elevate them. Maybe there's an injury, someone goes on IR, I can sign them. A lot of options there. In terms of safety, you know, I think it was talked about, I think this is something you mentioned in the fall as well, or during the summer, was, you know, going with the cheap option, Eddie Jackson, over trying to figure out a way to get Justin Simmons in the door. And I think that Simmons would have really been the guy that they could play pretty well in Atlanta this year, maybe not quite up to his previous career standards, but that could have been the guy that pairs with Washington as deep safety and really enables Hamilton to stay in that versatile role.
I was definitely not particularly happy with the Jackson signing. There's lots of pods about it out there. One of the problems is the yards per target metric, which is very central to any coverage player, he'd been terrible at for a four-year period, a 10.0 yards per target over a four-year period. He was worse, as it turned out, this year. I thought there was a chance that coming into a more specified half-field role as opposed to a full-time free safety in Chicago, he could excel in that. Not the case at all, obviously, and maybe we don't belabor that, but I will say the solution to this problem created a more hidden problem for the Ravens. So they moved Hamilton to Washington the back end, and that worked out great. You did actually lose some value in I think, Hamilton's impact on the game. We'll get into that, but those two guys did a great job down the stretch, totally turned around the Ravens' defense as a whole, but it did come with a significant cost, and that was that they really didn't have enough players. Now I'm talking about enough total players in the secondary to give a replacement option for Brandon Stevens. And they had to stick with him pretty much for the whole year. If Hamilton's at nickel, you got a chance to play Wiggins and Humphrey on the outside that you're doing. So there might have been options otherwise, but there was not an option once they moved Hamilton to the back end.
Yeah, I think, you know, and I think we'll talk about what the Ravens are should do at this position in the offseason later. But I think this approach going into the season was very much based on Williams recovering from last year's injury and returning to the player that he looked like he could be in Baltimore when he first signed. And when that falls away, and then you're back, and then your Jackson just is nothing close to what you paid for or to what you expected relative to his career. At that point, it is, I mean, they had to scramble. It really was like 10 weeks in, completely changing the back end of your defense is I would say not super common, but it was the right move. And I give credit to Zach Orr for being willing to make that move. It reminds me a little bit of Monken with the offensive line. He really wants to go five in pass protection, but he's made the adjustments over the last 2 years to add more help, or would really love to have Hamilton down near the line of scrimmage, playing the slot, playing dime, but he made the adjustments that he had to over the course of the season.
Yeah, he did. I think there have been some questions asked, and we have a lot of good comments that were made out today on Twitter that I want to kind of attach into this. But did Orr really make those changes quickly enough to wait 10 weeks for a team that had been a triple crown defense a year ago to just completely unravel for 10 weeks? And obviously they had a game each, I believe, with Williams back and Jackson out and Williams gone. And Jackson by himself on the back end cost them that Cleveland game with three touchdowns allowed, two on coverage and one on a missed tackle. And Williams obviously himself did so little in coverage this year. Was it reasonable for Orr to wait as long as he did to make these changes?
I think so, because what I look at is the amount of turnover that the Ravens dealt with this offseason on the defensive side of the ball and the coaching staff, especially losing a secondary coach. I'm blanking on his name. I think Denard Wilson to the Titans to be their defensive coordinator. And they quickly became one of the best passing defenses in the league under his tutelage. I think that's a huge statement about the value that he that Wilson brought to the Ravens when he was their secondary coach. And yeah. So losing him this offseason, I think, really set the secondary back. And when you're dealing with all of these other changes along the defensive line, linebacker, you have Marlon moving into the slot, I do think it was hard for them for a little while to pinpoint exactly what the problem was, because the pass rush was also pretty inconsistent over the first 10 weeks. And I would argue remained semi-inconsistent for most of the season. So I think it took him a little while to, as a first-time DC, I'm willing to give him a little bit more leeway and taking a little while to figure out exactly what the problem was, especially after all of that turnover.
It's a fair point. And we have 1200 Keem. Appreciate your comment out there. And we're using this as hashtag film study. He says, this is my problem with John. I guess he's blaming Harbaugh. Why not hire the guy who went to the Titans? He's talking about Daryl Worley. I honestly don't understand. Actually, he's actually talking about Denard Wilson.
That's who I was just talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Went to scheme. All of our players played worse under Zach. You see how long it takes him to adjust. Remember when Mike would adjust after the first drive. By the way, I think that's something that comes with time at the defensive coordinator job, is you get better at making adjustments more quickly. So if you want everybody to be Steve Spagnuolo out of the gate, you're probably not going to be satisfied with any defensive coordinator. Mike McDonald was exceptionally good. He's also had a terrific internship and management training program effectively by going to Michigan for a year to be their DC. So I don't think it's fair to judge Orr in that same way. I think, you know, it seems like the Orr-Pease relationship is a good one. They're planning apparently to keep Dean Pease for next year as a consultant. I think that's a good plan. I the Ravens have been very fortunate. We've gotten so spoiled on defensive coordinators. You look at the offensive coordinators, a bunch of crap in that group. The defensive coordinators, they really never had a bad one.
Exactly. And I think, you know, McDonald had to take his lumps in 2022, his first year as coordinator. Some of those leads that they gave up, he earned plenty of criticism for them. People were saying these same exact things about Orr this year. So I think it's, like you said, I think McDonald had more experience and a bit of a leg up in the coaching management realm, was dealing with, I would say, just a more experienced, proven, this is not to insult anyone on the current staff, but I think he was dealing with a better staff, a more experienced staff. And so I think Orr stepped into a tougher job, I think, than people realized this year. And I think the adjustments that he made are probably the thing I remember more about this defense than the pass struggles to start the season. The fact that he was able to isolate the problem, and look, they had a 5'7" free safety playing lights out for most of the back end of the season. And I think that is also a testament to or being willing to take a chance on a guy that, you know, has struggled with injuries and no other team has really wanted to touch while he's been in the NFL. And Ardarius Washington, of course, who I'm talking about.
I don't disagree with that at all. And I think it was kind of a brave move to put Ardarius out of there. It was born, you know, the Herb Brooks thing, great moments are born of great opportunity kind of thing. Well, great opportunity is sometimes born of great desperation. And the Ravens certainly were in that point there with Ardarius Washington. And it just didn't, they didn't have another option. They could have, I guess they could have moved Humphrey to the back end, but they really didn't have another option that made sense.
Yeah, and Humphrey did play some, at least line up at safety on some looks late in the season that I quite liked in the passing defense, which is, I think, got people talking. Maybe he could be a safety later in his career. Potentially, I don't think that's happening anytime soon with how he played this year.
I think it will happen suddenly when it happens. He'll lose a step at corner. They won't have as much use for him on the slot, and then he'll move to safety. And I think it'll be a great safety now based on the ball skills we saw, the move to off man. It's probably nobody in the NFL right now. Jimmy Smith had some of this too, by the way, who can make an interception on somebody else's coverage assignment as well as Marlon Humphrey can right now.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. The Ravens still going with a too high shell, lots of rotation out of it. I thought one of the good things about this season in the second half, obviously, was that they were very good about not giving away how they were rotating and how they were blitzing. So if you can give away your blitz off the slot in two ways, or off the corner for that matter, you can give away your blitz in two ways. One is your slot corner can get antsy and start to move in towards the defensive end, and the quarterback can figure it out and deal with it, or at least know that he's got to go to a hot read. The second way you can blow it is your safety can move down too quickly to fill for that slot corner. And so you want to have both timed up very well relative to the snap, so you don't end up with you know, giving that away to the QB in particular, who's going to understand what hot read he has to make. I thought the Ravens were very good at that this year.
Yeah, so, I felt like the disguise coverages and the rotations improved a lot as the year went on. I think there were a number of occasions in which it kind of fell to Hamilton to do a lot from, you know, lining up close to the line of scrimmage and then somehow sprinting into a deep middle or deep half look. And he's one of the few players in the NFL that can do that. So I also think Orr did a good job going to the best player arguably on the field when, you know, in those moments of desperation. Yes, he put Ardarius Washington on the field, but then he put the responsibility and the tougher assignments on Kyle Hamilton, even tougher than maybe what his assignments are where they start the year, and asked him to really cover a lot of ground. And Hamilton really did a great job. And I think, again, it's tough to make that switch halfway through the season and not just make that switch to be a deep safety, but to still be able to threaten the defense at the dime, at the slot, or threaten the offense at the dime in the slot.
Yeah. Do you mean from the back end that he could still do it?
Yeah. That he, and he, I mean, he still continued to line up. I think his snaps went up to like 70% deep safety after week 10, but still 30% of his snaps were down in the box in the slot. And there were still plenty of occasions where he raced back to cover the deep areas of the field from those alignments.
Yeah. I'm hesitant to look at PFF where players were lined up because they're so motion dependent. So I'm hesitant to look at that kind of a number, but you're right.
The numbers I was referring to were the next gen stats that use player tracking.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So they're, I mean, also probably motion dependent because they're good to the degree they're moving. But anyway, appreciate that. Want to talk about a large philosophical change for this defense between 23 and 24. And this is one of the big differences between McDonald and Orr is the Ravens in 2023 had much more of a fixed too high look to begin the play. They did less of it in 2024, but the fixed too high look meant that they were daring the other team to run the ball basically. And they gave up some run plays in 23. They, you know, gave up a much higher yards per carry than we're used to, but they more than made up for that in terms of their success against the pass. This year, they returned to being the number one run defense in the NFL, and they gave up a lot more against the pass, particularly early in the season.
Yeah, I think that switch, again, I do partially look at some of the personnel changes that they made, the personnel changes that happened over the offseason, you know, having an uncertain second linebacker situation with Patrick Queen leaving and Trenton Simpson not stepping up the way people were hoping to replace him. And I think that as a result, early in the season, Orr was more willing to maybe not load the box, but at least have an even number of defenders and blockers in the box and give him give his defense and trust. You know, this was the thing. He was trying to trust his guys in the back end. And when that proved it couldn't work, I think they really had to change. I also think the Ravens' focus on run defense was partially just to try and use the spine of their defense that's really strong in Travis Jones, Matt Ibike, Roquan Smith, and trust those guys to be able to make plays. I don't know the stats off the top of my head for the run defense after they switched to deep safety, but it didn't take a significant hit with Hamilton coming out of that dime backer slot role. I think part of that is because of how well Humphrey played against the run. But it's interesting that it didn't take a huge, huge hit even with Hamilton not up near the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, it could be opponent dependent too. I'd really have to look at that. They did face Saquon Barkley in the second half, but I really need to take a look at that. If I like the too high safety maintained for as long as possible look, but one of the things you need in that situation is three safeties comfortable with playing high and also comfortable with rotational coverages. And some are, and some they either want to be center fielders or they really have a strong a predilection to be run fit guys. And if you want to play too high, if you really want to look too high and be as flexible as possible, then you really want to have two guys who are comfortable playing center field. And that's where the Ravens are a little short on those skills right now. It's not like Hamilton can't do that. You know, I think you reduce him from being the ace of trumps if he's the strong side defender and horizontally, you know, destroying that strong side to being the queen of hearts at free safety. But he's still a good card relative to the two of clubs you're discarding, you know, to make that change.
Right. And that's, you know, again, going into the offseason, that's kind of what they're looking at. It's what they'd like to do. But I think the, you know, necessity, like we talked about earlier, the necessity, the desperation means if you have to sacrifice the ace of trump for the queen of hearts in the middle of the season, you do that every time. It's in the offseason where you try and get Hamilton back to that ace of trump role. What I'm curious about your perspective on is if you see Ardarius as the kind of guy who can be one of those three safeties that you talked about, because he certainly did have a very good closeout to the year, both in coverage and in run support. It would seem like he is a solid guy for the Ravens moving forward. I know we'll talk about him in more detail in a little bit.
Yeah, and that is a big question. I think the Ravens lack quality tackling right now on the back end. It's really the only place on the team where they don't really have it nailed down. They have very good tackling front six. They don't have guys on the back end who are exceptional tacklers, and particularly that shows up at safety. Other teams, like I would say, it is the unheralded strength of the Pittsburgh Steelers defense and all their, you know, Cam Hayward and their three guys who can rush the passer, and sometimes even Patrick Queen get credit for being good players on that defense. DeShon Elliott is the star of that defense. I mean, he's incredible years of tackler. He's effectively Patrick Queen's missed tackle cleanup guy. Mm-hmm. You know, the Ravens need someone like that. And as much as Washington is a nose into the play guy, has no fear of larger men, which is good because there only are larger men in the NFL. But, no, it's Washington. But has no fear that he's still not a very good tackler. He's still towards the bottom of the NFL in terms of his tackling ability, and that's potentially an issue. Long term, I would say he probably can help the Ravens more at slot corner, but he certainly was so good and so good from the coverage standpoint in 2024 on the back end that it's very hard to have anything negative to say. But I do think it comes into the question of his contract, which we'll get to a little later.
Yeah, and then the other two on the roster, Kane and Brady. I'm sure that you agree with me on this, that they just don't present as those guys. They are downhill run fit safeties. There's certainly room for development, but going into next season, neither of those guys are should be factoring into the full time defensive safety conversation.
Yeah, they were drafted as special teams players. Honestly, actually, Brady wasn't drafted at all, but Kane was drafted as a special teams ace, seventh round guy, and I guess that's okay. I'll point to the opportunity cost again. You got to be ruthless and willing to cut a player like either Kane or Brady, despite the fact you drafted him. If you find anybody with free safety characteristics, whether they be undrafted, whether they be a guy you bring in as a cheap vet guy, whatever it might be.
Yeah, 100%, because I think at that point they were banking on Eddie Jackson being able to do the trick after signing him during training camp. And that was a fairly big risk that obviously didn't pay off.
If they're fortunate in 23 also, I think, to have four guys who really fit the back end role. And that's unusual you have that on a team. So you can't expect them to have it every time. But on the other hand, if you're going to play this really dominant safety-led defense that I think the Ravens would be ideally playing, because the other thing it does is minimizes the negative impact of your weak side linebacker to have a great dime back. Most important plays, he's off the field. You have Hamilton, and instead, if you can have him there or another good dime back. And that's kind of been the Ravens' way for their entire history. It's been Ray Lewis and another guy, an inside linebacker, and the other guy is usually a platoon role where you have multiple skill sets you're working at. But anyway, getting back to 23, four guys, Worley, Hamilton, Williams, and Stone, all met the standard of what they needed. And even though Stone's gone on to not good things, Williams had a terrible 2024, and Worley didn't have a good year in Tennessee in about 400 snaps. All those guys met the standard for working within the McDonald scheme, which is kind of another reason why you think like an Eddie Jackson-esque signing isn't doomed to fail.
Yeah, I think there was, again, I think there was a lot of optimism in the building when they signed Eddie Jackson. I remember his first practice. He had a pick six or something like that. And obviously that's training camp. That's nothing that's going to be super indicative of the season, but it is reasonable to see why they thought that would work out better. And then once you're in the season, the roster moves just become tougher with practice squads and not wanting to necessarily risk a guy on waivers, especially a guy like Cade, who did show out, I felt like, on special teams to start the year. I thought he looked very, very good on special teams to start the year. And so you wonder if, you waive him, he's got 3 years left on a seventh round pick deal, a team that, just wants to grab a developmental special team safety. And, they're not, I think about the Titans just as a random example, might look to grab a guy like that. Same thing with Brady with 2 years left with, a 3-year undrafted contract, and say, hey, we can get a special teams guy for cheap and see if we can develop him. So I understand some of the concern with making that move as well.
Fine. If this player has more value to another team than the Ravens, then it's one team's trash is another team's treasure. And that could be the Chargers or the Titans or some other team that doesn't have a fairly well-developed back end. But that opportunity cost, I was particularly bothered by it, and it became a larger opportunity cost as the Ravens made sacrifices themselves to have more special teams players on the active game day roster. So they'd activate Kane, Brady, or both, and that would mean in a number of games that they went with four defensive linemen. And that's just a ridiculous choice. I mean, that's just it's so risky. It's not the proper risk-adjusted return that they got on that move. Whether it worked out or not in any individual games, it is not the proper risk-adjusted return when you have the kick it in the end zone option.
Yeah, and I don't want to get too sidetracked on special teams, but the one thing I will add is this, is the new kickoff rule and a punter that at this point the Ravens seem to feel pretty good about. It's one of those things where, especially as Jackson gets more and more expensive, the roster spots and the money can't continue to go towards quite so many special teams only players, unless you want to punt on, the kicker and punter position, which the Ravens are never going to do. So at some point you kind of have to choose and say, look, we have the talent at kicker and punter. I know Tucker had a down year, but that has nothing to do with touchbacks. And you say, look, we have our talent here. We have to trust that, maybe we don't have all the best special teams players, but a third, you know, a fourth safety that you play on defense is way more valuable at that point, especially if you can then coordinate your special teams to just reduce the risk and reduce the impact of those special teams players coming downhill.
And that's really not hard to do in today's NFL, because you can completely reduce variance on kickoffs that you're making yourself. The other team may force you into some return situations where I'd argue larger men might actually help you, like having Patrick Ricard on the kickoff return team. And I don't know if he was at all. He's been in the past in when they had a wedge, you know, that they were still using, but I don't know that he is anymore. But I'd say when you're lined up as in as close proximity as the two groups are, you still could use a big blocker and a large man could help you under those circumstances. I'm not buying the need to do it. You want to change the punting thing, punt short and high or punt out of bounds. Those are the two ways you can reduce variance on the punt and cause a lot of fair catches or not return situations.
And exactly. Because I think any losses that happen on special teams is far outweighed by the gains that you can get on defense.
Right.
With better management there.
Yeah, completely agree. Okay. Let's move on. Individual players. Kyle Hamilton, AP2 this year after an AP1 in 2023. I thought he probably got hosed a little bit. And the Ravens overall obviously did very well in the All-Pro things. But Kirby Joseph had a very nice season. Hamilton certainly could have been AP1 again. Play on the back end was excellent, but his play at slot corner was even more outstanding. And it's sad that he is, you know, was not able to be kept in that role.
Yeah. Destroyer of screens, can't really run to the outside when he's lined up on the strong side. So much that he does, not just as a force, but also allows you to do schematically and forces the other opponents to think about schematically. I mean, yep. He is one of those players that quarterbacks have to look for on every play.
Coverage stats were outstanding. They were very good. 5.3 yards per target is really the standout number. The 85.9 opposition passer rating was higher than last year when he had I think four interceptions on the season. Only had one this year. Unfortunate, obviously lost the Ravens a game by not making a second one against Cleveland during the final minutes. But he had a lot of spectacular downhill plays even after he moved to the back end. A lot of times, you know, a pass still goes to one side and he's able to run downhill and make a play.
Yeah, I was at that Steelers game in week 11 in Pittsburgh, and that was the big thing I was watching when Hamilton and Washington were, you know, playing deep safety, was Hamilton's ability to still come down and blow up plays coming downhill, even when he's lined 15 yards off the line of scrimmage, which I thought is just really impressive, not just for his athleticism, but his IQ and his ability to read and find the right path downhill. I mean, some of these guys who are pure downhill safeties don't come close to his level.
Right. No, that's a good point. He's with his length and his ability to shed, he's just really unblockable. So it really doesn't even matter how big the opponent is. They can get as lungy as they want. They can do a bunch of things. But unless you've got him in a tight space, you can't really block him anywhere in the open field, which is where they are on the edge. He just can't be blocked. Yeah. All right. We talked about movement to the back end with kind of reducing his playmaking. He's still an effective pass rusher, but he's not really used that much anymore. Only 21 times in 2024. Remember, he had the three sacks just in a half against Indianapolis. That was a little bit of them not being able to adjust to what Kyle Hamilton was doing to them. But he's still effective in that role. But Marlon Humphrey took over, a much more significant role in terms of the rushing off the slot.
Yep. And another good adjustment, because you can't have Hamilton down near the line of scrimmage. And Humphrey has excelled as a blitzer before. When he has been in the slot, he has been a very good blitzer. And I felt like that was another, you know, good adjustment to try and make up for some of what you're losing by moving Hamilton back to the deep end. You know, I think, again, it's something you'd love to set him up to do a little bit more next year. But that's also that was also a bit of a luxury, I think, even thinking back to his rookie year when the Ravens had Chuck Clark and Marcus Williams at safety, and they could really unleash Hamilton at the line of scrimmage. Last year, I felt like they did it. I don't know the rate at which he blitzed last year, but certainly much less this year.
21 pass rushes this year, and Marlon Humphrey, for comparison purposes, had 41. So, you know, it's that slot corner is still a major pass rush element for the Ravens. They get a lot of schematic rush. I'm not really buying there's a lot of crap going around on Twitter about the need for a top edge rusher. The Ravens have a need for another quality edge rusher because they're short on it, total edge rushers. But they don't have a need necessarily to go out and spend their first round draft pick on an edge. It's one of the possible places, but it's not a place where they need to feel like it's the only choice because they've been so successful at finding these cheap guys out of the bargain bin in free agency. And it's frankly a very deep pool of talent there.
Yeah, I think that's probably where they would look first. I think, you know, I think ultimately the way the pass rush started to coalesce more with coverage, just the way that felt more synergistic, I think was a key part of the second half of the season too, that Orr can definitely carry into 25. Because I think that was also a big part of when the pass rush did get home and the Ravens were able to get coverage sacks or they were able to get quick pressure off a blitz. I felt like that was partially because the coverage on the back end was synergistic with what the blitz call was.
It's always has to be the case. It's like pitching and defense, separating coverage and pass rush is very difficult. But they got high quality sacks. They got them when they needed them in some cases. And people who say that the Ravens didn't get any sacks when they needed them, think back to that Cincinnati game, tied in the last, 2 minutes ago or whatever it was. And Madubuike comes through for a sack minus seven. All of a sudden, they're off the field punting because they have to play three down football in their half of the field. So they had big sacks this year. They were not as dominant a pass rush team as they were in 2023, but you don't have to be. 2023 is a complete aberration outlier, and they were second in the league in sacks. They actually way outperformed where I expect them to be based on the loss of Clowney.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that, again, not to focus too much on the pass rush here, but I think that, circling back to what we were saying about Hamilton and Humphrey, I felt like that was, again, a lever that Orr started to pull a little bit more as the season went on when he realized, okay, sometimes I feel like they had a really low blitz rate to start the season. I felt like he started to ramp it up, a little bit more. Some people look at that and say, well, you're losing resources and coverage, but when you're speeding up the quarterback, that's arguably just as valuable as having an extra player out there.
Yeah, well, that's certainly true. I do think that after Pease got to the Ravens, they really reduced the amount of blitzing they did. And I keep track of that on a per play basis. And I have not tabulated up to look like really carefully trend it. But the one game where they really went after the quarterback was when the Giants had those two bozos out there who had no experience. And that was well warranted. But the rest of the games, I mean, they were extremely conservative, unaggressive with that. I think it's actually an area where having Pease around in general, I think, is pretty good to have him just as an oversight quality control guy. I kind of don't want the old Pease lack of aggression to be part of the Ravens defensive DNA, though. I think that you do so well with applying pressure defensively.
Yeah, and it's all balance. Like we talked about with Orr earlier, he's a first year DC, a lot of turnover. He's not coming in with all the experience that McDonald did his first time calling plays. So again, some of the ups and downs, I think it's about finding your rhythm and finding your balance and identity as a defensive play caller. And I think that surprisingly with Orr, as a former linebacker, there was a lot of talk about, okay, is he going to have that level of aggression in his play calling that he seems to have in his, his general approach to the game. And I think that that's something that he figured out a way to temper over the course of the season. I think that, as a former defender, former front seven defender, you want to be blitzing, you want to be getting at the quarterback. But I felt like, he found ways to temper that throughout the year. Ultimately, again, I still think it's, a first year DC. I think there's a lot of evaluation that goes into the whole year. And then when you step back and, you look at the first 10 games and, the alarm bells are going off. You look at the season.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, Not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Zaxby's Sensation Salad is so much more than a plain old salad. It's a salad. Which begs the question, at what point does a salad stop being a salad and become a salad? Is it when you add Zaxby's fried chicken to it? Crunchy wontons? Asian slaw? Citrus vinaigrette? Teriyaki glaze? Sweet and spicy sauce? Or is it when you top it all with a handmade perfectly fried egg roll? Without a doubt, the egg roll. The Sensation Salad, only at Zaxby's.
As a whole, and you know, he really did figure out, I think by the end of the season, what his identity was.
Yeah, the trend is the right way. You want the recent historical experience to be the best, and they did show up well down the stretch, so that's at least positive. Let's get back to Hamilton for a second. A 14.6% missed tackle rate was up from 23 and 48th among 66 safeties who had at least 50% playing time. That uses a PFF missed tackle description. That's not what you want on the back end. And then Ardarius Washington was just behind him at 50th of 66, which was an addition to the problem. Did the Ravens give up tons of long plays? They did, certainly in the first 10 weeks, and that's not when those two guys were back there. So it's really hard to say exactly why this missed tackle rate was what it was, but it could be that they were both having a little bit more trouble making tackles close to the line of scrimmage early in the season. I haven't really looked it out that way. Hamilton's certainly have some missed tackle problems as the season ended. But it's an area for improvement. As much as Hamilton's great at shedding blocks, he needs to finish the job a high percentage of the time. And part of that may be that there's a lot of open field tackling that his skill set puts him in a position to make. And that kind of those kind of tackling have much higher miss rates.
Yeah, I think especially after the move to deep safety, he's playing, less near the line of scrimmage, more out in space where ball carriers have more time to pick up speed and make moves. So, you know, I think that Hamilton also has a tendency to come flying downhill, and that can lead to some of his missed tackles. It also leads to some of his spectacular plays. So I think it's also a risk reward thing that, you know, Hamilton and the defense have to calculate in terms of how much do you want, you know, how much can you really rein a guy like that in? How much do you want to rein a guy like that in when so much of his spectacular plays are because of his ability to instinctually read plays and come crashing downfield?
Right. All right, let's move on and talk about Ardarius here. Breakout year. When he was moved to the back end, he's consistently winning a job of some sort in camp. You and I were both there, obviously, but I thought that Washington by the end of camp was right there with Humphrey as the most dominant defender, a guy who just showed instincts, played on the back end a fair amount as camp was winding down, and really looked the part.
Agreed. And I think, you know, we talked about did Orr wait too long. I think the surprise for me was that he didn't at least try to go to Washington in some capacity a little bit earlier and, you know, see how he would fit next to Williams and Jackson. You know, he only had one game next to them apiece before week 10. And then obviously the big switch was made. I think the thing with Washington for me is, and we've talked about it, is it's just really impressive for a guy his size to be able to make some of the plays that he did over the course of the season. I think that speaks tremendously to what has been a big part of his identity since coming to Baltimore, which is his want to, his effort and his motor. And I think those are real things that the Ravens lean into with him down the stretch.
7.2 yards per target, a 105.8 opposition passer rating. There isn't much about that that would tell you this is the guy we need to have on the back end, or this is the guy we need to have in coverage at all. I mean, 7.2 yards per target is okay. 105.8 opposition passer rating is a little high. But one thing we definitely saw this year was good instincts to be in the position where the football was. Now, the problem was he didn't convert a lot of those chances into interceptions. And he and Wiggins had a season of dueling missed interception opportunities that was pretty bad. But certainly a guy who's been in position to make some plays.
Yeah, and again, the size factor comes into it there, where, you know, those plays just get a little bit harder when he's trying to fight off a 6'5", 5'10" receiver who's got 3 inches on him for some of those contested balls. And I think that's an area where, you know, obviously the wide open ones, you hope for some positive regression, but I'm not expecting him to necessarily come away with a ton of those interception opportunities moving forward. I think still the, you know, pass breakups and the ability to get the ball on the ground at least will be there. But I do think that, you know, there is a, you know, uphill climb that he faces when he's trying to make some of those plays. That's not going to go away.
Let me put this in terms that I use in the expectation series. What would a great season for Ardarius Washington look like in 2025, presuming that he stays in a deep safety role? I don't want to call him a free safety or a split field safety. He's got elements of both. But what would be a great season, 80th percentile of what you would hope for number of interceptions?
Yeah, I mean, I think interceptions, it's also like, you know, there can be a little bit tough to quantify like that. I would say even just getting to 4, given the number of times he had 2 this year. And I think getting to 4 would be him converting 2 of those easier opportunities without expecting him to do too much in terms of contested interceptions. I think that's a reasonable expectation, because I think that's probably what he should have had based on his opportunity set this year.
Probably, that's probably about right. And I'm right there with you. 4 interceptions is what I'd want to see at the 80 percentile mark. Could even be higher. I wouldn't shock me if he all of a sudden became Geno Stone and had a, you know, 6 interception year, but 4 would be an 80th percentile number. One thing I like about Washington is the fearlessness in coverage. He does not seem to fear size in any way. I know I talked about it earlier, but big tight ends, he's covering a lot of the time as a safety there and still doing a good job with it, and not afraid to tackle them and not afraid to go up in coverage and try and high point them.
Yeah, like I said, a trademark of his play, even dating back to TCU, I think one of the real reasons the Ravens were excited about him as an undrafted free agent, offered him a pretty sizable undrafted rookie contract. I believe a lot of people were surprised that he went undrafted because of his ability to play above his size, you know, physically and you know, also I think an aspect of his game that's grown is, you know, the mental ability to put himself in a better position to make the play despite his size, where he's not, you know, diving at ankles too often. He's not he's not boxed out at the catch point too often. He does a very good job of putting himself in the position to make the plays.
Yeah. All right. Now, market value for him is going to be a big consideration this offseason, because he's now played his 3rd season, even though he's been in the round for 4 years. He's got 3 accrued seasons of performance, or of what I want to say, service. So he could be extended early right now. There's an RFA tender that's right around $5 million that the Ravens would have to pay to stick a 2nd round tag on him, which they probably would do, as opposed to, you know, another option with Ardarius, and this is to use a non-round tender where they just have the right to match the offer.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. That right of first refusal tender is just over $3 million. His market's kind of tough to assess for a couple of reasons. One, a lot of those preconceptions about his size that were in scouting departments around the NFL when he was when he went undrafted, a lot of those are still going to be around. He, especially because, you know, he played very well, but that was 10 starts that he had to close out the season. It wasn't like he was starting the whole season, and he only played in, I believe, 8 games in his first 3 seasons due to injury. So that's going to really, I think, deflate his market level and make it, to me, very unlikely that a team would give up a 2nd rounder for him to sign him to a deal.
0% chance of that.
Yeah,
zero.
And I think the Ravens,
frankly,
are...
If someone were to offer a 2nd round pick for Ardarius, I mean, we'd trade him in a heartbeat.
Yeah, the Ravens would be very happy with that. But then when I look at his market value, I think this is actually why they go with the low tender. It's actually a very weak middle-class safety market. There are a number of players around the league. Cameron Curl in LA for the Rams, Jeremy Chinn for the Commanders, Josh Metellus for the Vikings, and Aloe Gilman for the Chargers before that jumped out as me as recent contracts that were signed coming into this year. And those guys had multiple years of full-time starters under their belt. While I didn't compare all their stats to Ardarius, the fact that they had multiple years at full-time starters does at least tell you that they provided a floor of performance. None of those guys are earning more than, I think, 4.5 or 5 a year. Mm-hmm. So with Washington's with the scouting conceptions and the injury history, I actually think the low round tender is going to be their ultimate path. Now, or would be the smartest path in terms of an RFA tender. Now, you mentioned an extension, and I think that is probably what they try to get done first. Somewhere in between the two tags, something like at a $4 million APY, maybe something a little above that. I think would be appropriate given those comparisons I just mentioned are all paid. A little bit more either in raw dollar amount or in terms of the salary cap if they signed a year or two ago. So I think those guys are, I think that is probably the range that you're looking at. And that is, again, right between the two tenders that the Ravens are considering, which, it's a different situation, but it's a similar route that they took with Ardarius Washington when he was a pending or restricted free agent. They looked at the two tags that he was kind of sitting between, and they came up with an APY that was between them on a longer deal.
Are you talking about another player than Ardarius? Because you just said that's what they did with Ardarius Washington.
Sorry, that's what they did with Rashad Bateman last year. Yeah. With Rashad Bateman last year, he was a pending free agent, and the extension that they signed him to, part of the calculation in that was finding a APY that was between the two tag levels that they were considering, similar to what I think they should do with Washington.
Okay, so Bateman's situation is actually much more complex than that because he had showed up 2 days late, had lost a year of service due to it, and so the Ravens owed him nothing, and they would have maintained the rights to have a fifth year option on him. I think after the next year,
I don't know. I think if I remember correctly, the fifth year option went completely out the window. Okay, they couldn't even kick it down for another year. It went completely out the window. So if they wanted to keep him under contract past 24, which was his fourth season, they would have had to sign him to an extension. Otherwise, they could have hit him with an RFA tag for 24.
For 25 or for 24?
For 24. He would have been an RFA for 25. Sorry.
So he would have been an RFA in 25. You put a second round tender on him. You essentially lock him in for another $5 million. So the Ravens did. I honestly think there was divisible benefit on the table there, and we know that Bateman fired his agent over this thing. Mm-hmm. But he has now one of the most valuable contracts in the NFL in terms of performance relative to cap cost. He's one of the few wide receivers you could trade for a number one draft pick.
Yes. And so, like you said, with Ardarius Washington, very different circumstances. But I think in terms of the route that the Ravens may want to take with him, the contract design of where they looked at the tag, where they looked at the tenders were going to be, looking in between for an APY in between the two tenders they were considering, makes sense, especially for this safety market and where it is right now.
Okay. And I'd be in the same boat. I think at 3 years at 12 to 14 million is where I'd want to get the extension done. And it would mean he'd be a Raven through the 2028 season because he's already signed. Well, you could just sign him now and have those 3 years be the year to sign him for 25 to 27, or you could extend him, but he's not signed yet. So I think it would mean 25 to 27. He'd be a Raven at that price.
Yeah. And I think that's, I think 12 to 14, The exact details can come down later. I do think a decent per game roster bonus would be warranted given his injury history, to give the Ravens a little bit of protection on that front to get even the weekly cap dollars back. If he misses a large amount of time, that can still make a difference for a team like the Ravens who are always seem to be up against it.
Yeah, they had injury insurance on Marcus Williams that they cashed in on to a small degree in the first 2 years of the contract. This would have been a great year. Well, frankly, if he'd gotten hurt, it probably would have been good for the Ravens to recollect some of that value. You don't want that. Let's talk about Marcus a little bit. There's no injuries to blame in terms of what happened to him. His tackling improved from 2023 when he was playing with one arm essentially, but his coverage stats went to hell. And I don't think this is widely known, but the passer rating against him was a perfect 158.3 in 24. It's not a lot of total targets, 17 total targets. And he allowed 14.5 yards per target. Now, that is an absurd number. It's completely unacceptable. And his passer rating over the last three seasons, 41.9 in 2022, 112.2 in 2024, and 158.3 in 2024. Incredible. Just incredible three-year stretch.
Yeah, and like we talked about, like I said earlier, the injury last year, some of the drop in play, you could tell physically how much the injury was limiting him just in terms of tackling, and certainly a shoulder injury, or I think a pectoral injury, is going to come up, you know, across the board on defense as a safety. So the regression in 23, I didn't think was going to be such a heavy predictor of what would happen to him this year. To me, it's, you know, it's kind of a mystery exactly what happened, right? It's clear that, you know, he struggled to make plays on the ball, struggled in his coverage assignments. But the big question to me has been why this whole season, exactly why. And I don't know if we're going to ever get a clear answer on that. But it was a little mystifying to see a guy who, you know, had played really quite well when he was healthy. Especially in that first season, you think he came back from an injury that first season and played well, only to see him fall apart this year. And it was disappointing. I mean, it was one of the bigger free agent signings, I think maybe the biggest external free agent signing in Ravens history or close to it. And it was a really disappointing to see after, I think, a lot of people had high hopes. I really liked the signing at the time. I thought it, you know, if you look at where the safety market went, the $14 million per year was a pretty good number for the play that he showed initially.
Yeah, he'd been a good player at New Orleans and definitely was somebody that the Ravens got real value out of. He looked at a great per-play value from his first, even two seasons combined, if you want to throw them together. Fantastic in his first year. But the reports was that he didn't really buy in to Orr's system. At a very obvious lack of ball hawking, didn't bracket the way he had in previous years. You know, one of the things you really look at is if you got a single high, but especially if you've got a two high look, you want to make sure those safeties are providing you the value that your defense is giving up to put them in that position. So they have to be regularly on brackets, whether that means in the middle of the field, deep on the outside, whatever it might be. The advantage you get really is coverage deep on the outside on both sides by having too high. So they better be bracketing on those. And we didn't see him do it.
Yeah. And especially when I don't have the exact numbers on this, but from my recollection, he lined up primarily on Brandon Stevens' side of the field when he was in a two high alignment. And that was maybe the biggest issue of the year for the Ravens, was when quarterbacks would see those two on the same side of the field and find ways to exploit them because they were not bracketing. They were not passing off. They were not passing off receivers correctly. It led to a lot of big plays early on. And so the cleaned up safety play, certainly, you know, Stevens was still a liability down the stretch, but the cleaned up safety play put somewhat of a lid on it. The change in safety play put somewhat of a lid on the risk on that side. At least it didn't feel like there was going to be a home run ball, a touchdown, if opponents went deep on the left side.
Yeah, they unfortunately, lots of back shoulder problems there. We'll get to that in the cornerback episode. I don't need to hit it here. But lots of issues on that left offensive left side of the field, the right side of the defense. Okay, so Williams, strange journey, benched for a game, returned, played another game, actually might have played two games, and then he sat out the season as a healthy scratch effectively. He was actually active for two games, one snap each in those two games. He and Jackson, they combined for two total snaps after week 10. And when did the defense start to change? Well, week 11, when the changes were made. So it's a light switch kind of a turn here. Just a very, very strange situation with Brandon Williams, or with Marcus Williams.
Yeah, like I said, what happened is a mystery. The question is really why. Obviously, the Ravens aren't going to run things back with him next year. His contract was restructured, I believe, to set up a post-June 1st release. Yep. To reduce his cap hit going into free agency, so they have a little more cap room there, and then they can get the remainder of the savings once the post-June 1st release processes. Will he have better luck somewhere? I really don't know, given how strange the situation was and the really spectacular collapse in play.
Yeah, he's going to have to find another opportunity. There's opportunities at safety that occur naturally, and he might be a player who actually has to wait for his opportunity to come in season, but he'll be one of a number of players that they think of. And this year, Daryl Worley getting 400 snaps for Tennessee is a great example of a guy who I wasn't sure there'd be another chance for him. He's an older player in the league. He played well for the Ravens last year. You know, you and I saw him in camp. I thought he looked a step slow this year. And that was part of the reason he wasn't kept. Obviously, in retrospect, I think he would have been better than either Williams or Jackson, but the Ravens would have still been looking for answers if he was playing full time in a split field role, or even part time in a split field role.
Yep. And then, of course, the personal side of things, which became an issue with him and Jackson, who we'll get into in just a second. It's just also just disappointing to see out of any player. You know, if you're not going to buy into the defensive system in the first place, it's going to give you an uphill climb. And then, you know, as much as the Ravens try to keep a lid on these things, it was very, very clear over the course of the season that he was unhappy and then completely unwilling to play a special teams role.
Yeah. And Marcus Williams wouldn't have played a special teams role. Eddie Jackson didn't want to play a special teams role, and he had to, or that would have been that. Eddie Jackson, we'll talk about a little bit. He played 339 snaps this year, 33% of the season. It was all over the first 10 games. He didn't have a single snap after that. He allowed 10.9 yards per target. So that is actually a little bit better than Williams, still terrible. And 144.9 opposition QB rating. That uses the PFF targets, which I think, by the way, tend to understate the number of safety targets relative to linebackers. So it's usually on the L2, L3 throws, the ones that are between the second and third level, the underneath player gets charged with more of those. So it tends to understate the problems the safety is creating for you in those situations. But Jackson, no matter whose targets he used, was absolutely terrible.
Yeah, I agree with that assessment on the grade there, the yards per target note. Not a guy who he came on the field to be a deep safety. Does not have a history as a strong run defender, does not have a history as a guy who can come down in the slot. And when, you know, I don't want to go so far as say he was coming in as a one-trick pony, but he was coming as a player with a primary skill set and a primary responsibility in this defense and just never was able to hit it. And then he didn't have any other value anywhere else.
I wouldn't call him a one-trick pony, but I would say that he was really coming in to replace Geno Stone. And so his role, the free safety he'd been in Chicago, that role was over. That wasn't available to him here. The only role available was a split field role, which was a part-time role, because if you're in base defense, then Hamilton's on the back end. Fortunately, you're not in base defense that often. But he's obviously not wanting to play special teams when you're coming in like that. I can't believe that discussion was not had ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
But it should have been.
Yeah, the sense is you come in for a veteran minimum like that, you're willing to, you know, do what it takes to earn your spot and, you know, set yourself up for maybe a bigger veteran contract the next year. But that was just a big miss.
Perhaps the biggest, most telling statistic, the Ravens allowed 6.1 yards per play overall when Jackson was on the field and 4.7 when he wasn't. That is an unbelievable difference in yards per play for on and off the field.
Yeah, I mean, that would be tied with the Eagles for best in the NFL with Jackson off the field and worse, 0.7 yards worse, I think, or 0.1 yards worse than the Panthers, who were the worst defense in terms of yards per play last year.
That's a good way to analogize that. All right. Let's see. What do we want to talk about otherwise? He's still picked up by the Chargers afterwards, which is incredible. He's kind of like the DeAndre Houston Carson of last year. DeAndre Houston Carson, I think he played one snap for the Ravens or some trivial amount. Might have played a little special teams. But then he got cut, and the Texans picked him up, and he was the starter in the playoff game against the Ravens.
Just a crazy position. I mean, the Chargers dealt with a couple multiple injuries in their secondary to end the year. And at a certain point, you don't have anywhere else to turn. And I can understand the thinking being, this guy at least knows more about football, more about opposing offenses, and hopefully you rely a little bit more on that veteran experience. Obviously, did not help them in the playoffs.
What should the Ravens learn from this failed signing?
That's tough. I think one of the things is being a little bit more willing to consider the recent history, like you talked about, the yards per target that he averaged over the last couple of years.
Recent history, 4 years of 10 yards per target.
Yeah. I mean, it's out of what Halvis, I think, half of his career, honestly. So, yeah, I think considering that a little bit more, again, he came in on a veteran minimum deal. So they, you know, they, it's not like they went out and paid him the amount of money that Justin Simmons got. Like I said, I would have, you know, was very much hopeful that they were going to actually pony up and do what it would take contract wise to get Simmons. And obviously they weren't willing to do that. You know, I think the solution is really more in how they approach, you know, or the lesson to me is more how they approach the safety position in the draft. You know, they're not going to go out and spend obviously any kind of money, big money on a safety in free agency. But I do think it does speak more to what we've been talking about a number of times with Kane and Braid, and not investing and keeping both of those guys on the roster in favor of just another option at safety who you can actually play on defense.
Well, that's where I am as well. And I think you'll look for the free safety traits. It's actually a fairly limited pool every year of guys who really say, yeah, that guy's going to be a good free safety. There were guys who played free safeties last year and who had a number of picks. So one of the guys, and I'm forgetting the name right now, but he had 34 targets on the year and 5 interceptions. But it's like all but one of the other passes thrown in his direction were complete. And he gave up well, like 13 yards a target for the season. So it was an incredible risk reward relationship there that didn't seem to make sense. He's, as far as I'm concerned, he's a blacklist for me. I don't want a guy like that. I want a guy who has ball production on the back end. I want a guy who actually makes the quarterback afraid to throw the ball in his general direction.
Yep. I think, again, that's, we talked about the philosophy of defense and what they want. And if they want to tease the run the way that they do, then the guys that they have off the line of scrimmage playing on the back end, that has to be their skill set, not coming downhill to help more in the run game.
Right. All right. Well, completely agree, obviously, on that. And they need to do a better job of basically attacking the free safety skill set this offseason. Brandon Williams, a few snaps at safety down the stretch. It was interesting to me that he was the first man up or the next man up when they had problems where somebody had to leave the field for a few snaps here or there. But that's exactly what happened. He also played some snaps at dime. Now, Stevens is going to go to the open market. I take DaCosta's words a little bit different than everybody else, but he's going to have a chance to test the market. I think the Ravens probably will give him some floor offer, and he doesn't have to publicize that because it might be very low. But he could come back potentially and play dime or safety for the Ravens. He's one of the players that I think would be a possible fit for that role. It'd be a chance better than Jackson because he's a better athlete, frankly. But I think it would be, he's one of the possibilities that would come back in 25. It'd be for almost nothing. So it'd be a 1-year kind of prove it deal.
Yes, and I think that is the best way to proceed with Stevens, and I think that I've thought for a while that he actually belongs more on the inside and less out on an island at outside cornerback, a place where he can focus on keeping his eyes more on the quarterback instead of only on the receiver, which obviously was his big issue. But yeah, I think he's an option. You know, I think I haven't looked too much into this year's draft class, but I think there are, you know, I could definitely see a day two pick on a safety that they you know, I don't think there are any first round safety options for the Ravens. I'm not sure there are any first round safeties in this draft, but I think that the, you know, spending a day two pick on one of the better free safety options in the draft, I think is probably the best way to go, because this helps you kind of, you know, help build towards a more long-term solution for this problem.
The draft pick the Ravens really missed on was Xavier McKinney in 2020. Your Patrick Queen was a rookie. I think that's 2020. Mm-hmm. He's become a great free safety in this league. And if they had drafted him instead, the dominoes would have fallen as follows. They would have found a way to get by at weak side linebacker with a platoon of players, and it had been okay. It might not have been quite as good as Queen, but they also wouldn't have had to gone through Queen's BS growing problems in terms of tackling and coverage and whatnot. They would have not signed Marcus Williams because it wouldn't have made sense if they had Xavier McKinney on the back end. I can convince myself they would have drafted Hamilton anyway, even though that would have been a lot of resources tied up at safety between this, you know, a couple of first round picks back there. But boy, this defense would look a lot different if it was Xavier McKinney instead of Patrick McQueen in 2020.
Agreed. I think, I think Queen was one of the picks that it just felt like they talked themselves into over McKinney. I don't think it would have stopped them from drafting Hamilton the next year. I do think safety was a bigger future need than people thought going into that draft. Certainly something I underestimated going into that draft. They also, from what I understand, had Hamilton on their board as the kind of player that's a no-brainer to take at 14 if he happens to be there, which I 100% I agree with. There was never a question in my mind that that was the right pick.
Yeah. And as they've used him, there wouldn't have been any competition for the position going on. It would just been a total dollars of caps value spent at safety would make Voss's head explode. But otherwise, it's good.
Yeah, I think playing that out a little bit, I think McKinney is in the Marcus Williams role. You still have Chuck Clark, and Hamilton probably ends up having a similar rookie year in the second year development curve once you move on from Clark, and it's just him and McKinney at safety instead of him and Williams.
With you there. So right now, I would project the Ravens, and this looking ahead to 2025 needs, they need two guys who can play the back end. And one of those, I think, really has to come from the draft. It could be both come from the draft, but probably one comes from the draft, and one is a ready-to-go option where they try and pick a veteran who better matches the skill set for this. Geno Stone would potentially be a guy who might be available this offseason at a very limited price.
Yeah. He would have to be a cap cut for the Bengals to give up on McCoy so quickly with a new DC. It's tough to predict exactly what a new DC is going to come in and think about that roster. Otherwise, looking at, the safety position in terms of free agents, it's a lot of guys that you would have to look at as a third safety, which is, again, what they are primarily looking for. You're not going to take Hamilton off the field. Washington played well enough to certainly merit competing for a full-time starting job. And really, there's at the price point that they're looking at, there really aren't any guys available. And I'm even looking at the list of free agents right now, and there really are very few players that are jumping out at me in terms of names and talents for fits with the Ravens. But the good thing about the safety position is that there are a number of guys. I think Trayvon Merrick is probably just going to get way too much money as an unrestricted free agent. if the Raiders don't try and re-sign him, he would be like the ideal, like, oh my gosh, if we could go out and get him. But obviously there's no way you're spending that kind of money on a safety right now. And I think that's why, you're going to have to look into the middle-class safety market and really dive into not just players counting numbers, but really dive into their film to figure out who's going to fit your system best. Because there are a number of guys who are available who played, 80%+ of their defensive snaps last year. So there are options, but I think you have to be very more careful than you were with Jackson picking the right one.
Yeah. Not interested in dime candidates, honestly, at this point. It's kind of like drafting safeties. All of a sudden you have enough relievers, you're missing your whole starting rotation kind of thing. It's, you just can't make up for that with relievers, even with the strategies they use today. The other thing I'd really encourage for purposes of trying to get the back end spots filled, because it can be so challenging to find free safety traits, is that they really look for the center fielders that have the instincts over speed. So if I'm trying to answer the age old question of what marginal qualities could I maybe live with, I could live with a safety who has a little bit less speed and has great instincts. And we really have that with Kyle Hamilton right now.
Yeah. I think that to me, that's a way to go, and that's the route to go in a lot of, not just for safety, but for a number of positions. I think the advantage of instincts comes into play, not just in positioning where speed comes into play, but also in terms of ability to make plays on the ball. And I think that is really, really big time what the Ravens were missing this year from their safety play, was not just the complete lapses in coverage, but also their ability to come and make any kind of positive plays as well.
Yeah.
Inability.
Well, it's been great talking through this with you, Nick. A long discussion, obviously a little longer than we planned. It always is, and that's okay. The IDL discussion, I think, was even longer, so that's just fine. It's the first opportunity for us to reflect on this season and look back. But thanks for joining me on this. Tell folks where they can find your work online and talk to you directly.
Yeah, you can find my written work at Russell Shoe Report and Baltimore Beatdown. And you can find me on Twitter at Nick, N-I-K, Noseball.
All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, thanks for all your support listening this year. Really appreciate it. As always, Like and subscribe if you're listening on YouTube, please, if you'd like more content of this type. As always, any additional person you can tell about the pod is a good word of mouth addition for us. We're not algorithmically based as much as we are word of mouth based. So really appreciate the endorsements when you give those. Nick, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks so much, Ken. Always a pleasure.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and Watch or Tap, also on them.
Service plan required for Watch or Tap. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!